Good morning and welcome to our meeting. It is now 9:00 on May 23rd, 2023. And time to convene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Rebecca Wolf, President of the Commission. Today we have here in person, there in person, Commissioner Sid Logan, Vice President, Commissioner Tony Olson, Secretary, John Harlow, CEO, General Manager, Colin Willenbrock, General Counsel, Melissa Collins, Commission and Executive Services Director, Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board, and Morgan Stolzner, Deputy Clerk of the Board. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please mute or turn off your cell phones or other electronic devices. This session is for Board and CEO and General Manager to study and discuss issues among ourselves and with PUD staff. Good morning, Mr. Harlow. Would you please facilitate the discussion?
I would be happy to. Good morning, Commissioners. We have some good stuff on the agenda today, so we'll get right at it. First up is Laura Zorich with our community engagement update. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just forgot in between the last time I was here and today, there was the Energy Block Party. I know Aaron gave you quite a bit of an update on that, but you guys were all there. It was wonderful. So we're going to go through a couple of smaller events that have occurred since. Slide. These are our recent events. On Friday, we had Bike Everywhere Day, so it was a great partnership with Everett Transit. They were, encouraging folks to have alternative forms of transportation. So we had a couple of our own staff come and represent myself, David Kruger, and Jason Cummings, who runs the Commute Trip Reduction Program. We're all there to help support that booth. And then last Wednesday, there was a resource fair at the Volunteers of America of Western Washington that was quite large. Our CSR staff had to actually come back to pick up more giveaway items because it was such a successful event. And then the next slide, I wanted to ask Haley to actually prepare. So on Saturday, we had a small hydro appreciation day, and Haley's got lots of great information to share with us.
Yeah, my name is Haley Tangs, for those that don't know. And like Laura said, we had our hydropower appreciation day event out at Woods Creek Hydroelectric Project this past Saturday, May 20th. We ran four different tours at the site, starting at 9 in the morning and going to about 3 in the afternoon. We got a turnout about just shy of 85 folks out there from all different ages all across the county. And it was really great to see just how engaged folks were. Lots of great questions, and they got the opportunity to interact with a lot of different staff. At the top, they got to interact with different engineers in our department. They met with some natural resource folks in our volunteer food forest, learned a little bit about our terrestrial biology program. And then they got to go check out the waterfall, and they learned a lot from our operators and constructors down at the powerhouse. So it was a really great day. Lots of folks worked together to make this happen. And Jason Zazowski was there too. He gave a really great intro talk to the start of each tour, and people got to ask him some great high-level questions about hydropower in our region. So all in all, I think the day was a really good success.
Well, that's an impressive turnout from 85.
Yeah, and we had actually anticipated more. I think we were trying to keep it a little smaller just to make sure it was kind of manageable since it is in a more residential zone. But I think we learned a lot about how we can make even better next time that we can hopefully have an event like this.
How many tours did you say you did?
We did four. So we had two in the morning and two in the afternoon.
That's what I thought you said.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your good work.
And they sold out twice in a row.
Yeah.
So it was definitely something to do again, potentially in the future. Mm-hmm. And then the next slide is a couple of upcoming events that are going to be in the next month or so. So June 4th, Danger Busters. Once again, it's a don't be scared, be prepared at the Imagine Children's Museum. So our art trailer is going to plan to be there. The Everett Station District Alliance Town Hall is going to be in conjunction with the Farmers Market down at the Everett Station over here. And then we are going to have our first of many parade entries in the Marysville Strawberry Festival. So it'll be fun. And if you guys are interested in driving the parade truck, I'd be happy to at least offer that opportunity if you're
Let us touch that.
I know. Yeah, it's fixed up. They are they put it away, and then they're getting it nice and ready. I've forewarned transportation.
It's a clutch, though.
It is. It's a, I have fears of driving it, so I always try and find other volunteers. I'll say that.
We'll have strawberries by June 17th.
I am not sure about that. I would hope so. I've got a few in my backyard already, so yeah.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm impressed with such a great turnout.
Yeah.
Have we done anything on Edwards Creek before for the public, or?
I don't think for the public.
Yeah, we get a lot of elementary school tours out there, but this is our first time opening up to the public at large. And yeah, we had a lot of interest. I still had people like calling me even after the event closed, asking me to put on a wait list. So there's a lot of public interest in this. And we got a lot of thank yous too when we were there, like people were really excited just to be allowed to be on site and see it in action.
You know, that's wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you, Laura and Haley. Yeah, again, just another example of the work the team is doing to connect with our community and our customers. Fantastic work. So next on the agenda is a legislative update, but we have a full-blown review from Ryan Commons coming up. So unless there's any specific questions, we'll skip right through that. And get to Brad Spangler and the interlocal agreement with Snohomish County for road maintenance services. Good morning, Brad.
Good morning, John. Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
Brad Spangler, Senior Manager of Generation. We've had a number of interlocal agreements with the Snohomish County over the years, all of which have terminated by this point just because they've run their course. The Generation Department had an interlocal agreement specifically for road maintenance services, for things that the district couldn't generally get from our own crews without going to a contractor. Crack sealing, asphalt work, guardrail repairs, sign work, things like that. Things that we don't do as a utility typically, but that the county does. And so this, the request here is that you consider a replacement interlocal agreement with Snohomish County, and we would bring back a resolution for your consideration on June 13th. Next slide. That prior agreement was from 2014 through 2022. It was originally a three-year term, and it was renewed twice. And we used it for guardrail replacements, things like that, like I mentioned. When we were doing the no shooting signs along Salton Basin Road, the county was able to provide us with the sign blanks and the posts and so forth. So it's really, really helpful. When the county decided they were going to renew this, these interlocal agreements with all of the city jurisdictions, they made them a bilateral agreement to make them more like a mutual support agreement, so that if they needed support for road maintenance services from, say, City of Edmonds, if they had a county lands near it, or City of Monroe for county lands near there, they could ask for that mutual aid support, or if it was emergency response. Because we have an interlocal agreement and we have some abilities to do some of those things, they ask for us to also provide reciprocal support to the kind of support that they would provide for us. We just said, mine are based on availability of our crews and material availability and so forth, because we're very, very busy. But if you really need the help that badly, you can certainly look at our schedule and see if that's something we can support. So our major yard folks, leadership, Paul Kiss, looked at this and said, you know, if there's something that we can do, you bet. If we can't, we'll tell you. And that's exactly how the interlocal agreement is written.
So what would be some examples of the kinds of things that we would have the equipment and crew to do?
It could be something simple, like if there's a culvert that washes out, it could be a replacement of a culvert. If it's something where it's a road that needs to be rebuilt, we've got very, very talented folks in our major yard crew. Those are the kinds of things. Nothing related to electrical or generation or distribution, water, anything like that. That's not what this interlocal agreement is for. It's specifically for road maintenance services.
So then, when we would assist, does that include materials?
It would include materials, and it's fully reimbursable. Okay. It's not like we're doing it out of the goodness of our heart.
All right, thank you.
They do the work for us on a reimbursable basis. We would do the work for them on a fully reimbursable basis. It includes, through the finance department, all of the overhead requirements for fully recouping our cost of doing business.
It says reimbursement terms are specified in the dialect.
Absolutely.
But first consideration is given to the driveway.
Yes, it specifically says in the local agreement, it's subject to, it's provided that we have availability of personnel and material and equipment and so on. So that it does not disrupt our normal course of business.
So I understand how this works. If it's a project of ours, if we contact them and say, hey, we'd like you to replace this culvert, and they say, yeah, you know, we're just busy, can't get to it, can you do it? But would this also say, would they need contact us and say, hey, Stanwood needs a culvert? There's a culvert in Stanwood, it has nothing to do with the PUD, it needs to be replaced. Would they ask us to be doing things beyond our own projects?
Yes, that's what this is for.
Okay,
so
that's what I, that's
if it's a county culvert on a county road,
yeah,
they could ask for our support in helping them to replace that.
Okay.
On a fully reimbursable basis. And it has to be on the property owned by the requesting party. So it has to be in county right of way. We can't do something. This is not for doing work for the city of Stanwood,
right,
for the county.
I understand. Yeah.
Barring any questions, that's pretty much the nice thing about this is, from my perspective, we have a mutual customer base with the county. And this is really a good neighbor kind of a support, this kind of mutual aid.
It's really important.
I agree. Next step here is that I would come back for your consideration, the resolution authorizing the general manager or his designee to approve the interlocal agreement on the 13th of June.
Okay. Great. And that interlocal agreement protects utility from, let's say, damage or...
Our attorneys have been very, very thorough. There are hold harmless...
I know you guys are sick of me with asking about...
That's a perfect question, because we're like a third-party contractor and we're doing work for the county. But Colin has brilliant attorneys, and they've gone through with this with a fine-tuned comb.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
In fact, they've even rearranged and reorganized parts of it so that it actually fit the way that we want to make sure that it's legally constructed.
When does the new one expire? Or I was looking through the slides. The current one expired, past tense, at the end of 2022. Right?
December of 22.
Right. That is in your slides.
The current one expired December of 22. I'm looking to see when the new one, the duration.
What was the duration of the previous one?
They were 3 years renewable.
Okay. Probably the same.
So is the county moving to this because they're having staffing shortages, or are they trying to like sort of set up a mutual aid kind of network?
They did not indicate that there were any staffing issues. I think this was we have surges.
Yeah.
Where we need to go out to contractors to get work done. They were looking at this as an alternative where they're working with a non-contracting partner through an interlocal agreement.
It would be a great thing to have in place just if there was a natural disaster or something. Maybe get multiple organizations working on something, multiple people work taking care of it.
Mutual aid.
Yeah. I can get the expertise.
Oh, no, it's probably the same.
We'll find out next week.
We'll find out.
Yes, we definitely want the answers.
Are there any questions? That concludes my presentation.
Thank you.
Great job, Brad. And again, partnership is extremely valuable with the county. Okay, next up is Brian Collins with our 23 Washington State Legislative Session Act. Context and review. Good morning, Ryan.
Good morning. Good morning, commissioners. For the record, my name is Ryan Collins. I'm the program manager, government relations program manager for the district. And with the 2023 session officially over, I'm here to provide a recap of the legislative session. For our agenda today, I'll start with a quick overview of the legislative session, review our key legislation, cover the high details of the state budget, and then open it up for questions. As always, please feel free to stop me at any time if there are any questions that you have. I will also note, I believe Marian Daka, our contract lobbyist, is also on the line, who can also answer questions at any time. As I have mentioned before, in earlier presentations to the commission, this past session was a long session encompassing 105 days, with the start of the session on January 9th and having just ended on April 23rd. The primary reason for the longer session in odd years is so that the legislature can introduce and pass a two-year budget. As for the legislative productivity, this year there was a total of 2,303 bills introduced between the two chambers, with 404 having passed both and signed by the governor. For Snohomish PUD's government relations, we reviewed a total of 1,655 bills and engaged on 8 key pieces of legislation that we reported to the commission, in addition to monitoring another 300. The major legislative themes for this year were housing, including addressing homelessness, supply and affordability, behavioral health, public safety, and climate and environment. This year also marked the return to regular order, with the legislature meeting in person for the first time in 2 years. Notably, they did continue to allow hybrid participation in the committee meetings, which resulted in greater access statewide. 4 votes were uninterrupted from COVID outbreaks, which I know was a major concern at the beginning of session. Moreover, committee proceedings and hybrid testimony worked exceedingly well. In many respects, testifiers and committee members enjoyed the process more than they've had in the past. I certainly did. It also led to a quieter campus in Olympia, which was a mixed bag for some. For me, it made the parking slightly easier. It was one of the nice aspects of quieter campus. Regarding our key legislation, we reported to the commission on 8 bills from start to finish, with 5 signed into law. 3 proposals died along the legislative process, with the first not making it past the House of Origin cutoff, while the others failed in the other chamber's policy committee or on the chamber's floor. Next, I want to discuss in more detail those proposals that were on our key legislation report, were passed by the legislature, and then also signed by the governor. First is 2 SHB 1032, which directs the Department of Natural Resources in consultation with the Department of Commerce Energy Resilience and Emergency Management Office, say that 10 times fast, to develop and plan a planning format for electric utilities wildfire mitigation plans. As we have reported over the course of the session, Snohomish PUD supported this legislation and worked in concert with other utilities to make sure that the final legislative language was flexible for utilities' unique circumstances and varying service area geography. We also advocated that the Department of Natural Resources be the leading authority where there is significant expertise and a wider knowledge base of wildfires and mitigation strategies. The bill was signed by the governor on April 20th and has an effective date of July 23rd, which you'll hear quite frequently here. Next up is SHB 1117, which extends the requirements for the Department of Commerce and Utilities and Transportation Commission to convene energy resource adequacy stakeholder meetings until 2031. Like the wildfire mitigation plan proposal I just spoke about, Snohomish PUD was supportive of this bill and supported a nearly identical proposal last year. Along with other utilities, we advocated for extending the timeline of stakeholder meetings and continued analysis of resource adequacies as the state prioritizes electrification. Throughout the legislative process, we supported the bill and urged legislators to support the proposal as well. That ended in success with the governor signing the bill on May 1st with an effective date, July 23rd. Then there's SSB 5165, which amends the utilities integrated resource plans to incorporate transmission planning requirements. The new law is the state's primary directive to tackle the difficulties associated with transmission planning and help alleviate some of the concerns about resource adequacy. Snohomish PUD supported the bill after several amendments were made that addressed our initial concerns. Those include improving planning requirements that better differentiate between transmission service providers and transmission dependent utilities, modifying the conditional firm language that aligns with regional resource adequacy standards, and modified language that incorporates the voluntary participation of organizations with a role in the bulk transmission system, power transmission system. This last point improves coordination with regional entities, which are the primary owners and operators of transmission lines. The governor signed the bill on May 3rd and has an effective date again of July 23rd.
So Bonneville, the state doesn't have any authority to have them participate in this, do they? Or
correct.
So that's really, since they provide
a significant amount.
Transmission.
It is the challenge that the state was running into in terms of the transmission planning aspects, is that it tends to be more regionally focused. Yeah. And so this was their effort. And one of the things that we really wanted to engage upon is make sure that the language recognized exactly that, that there's these other entities that are bigger than the state that should be incorporated or at least encouraged to engage with us.
Yeah, the ones that own and build transmission.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you.
No problem. On the other side of the coin, the transmission planning is the governor's requested E2SHB 1216, which aims to improve the permitting and siting of clean energy projects. The bill attempts to balance the need for quicker permitting while also respecting local control and the need for community input and analyzing potential impacts. As for our efforts, we requested the legislation remain permissive throughout the process and monitor the legislation for potential amendments which would impact the district's operations positively or negatively. Thankfully, while the bill underwent significant revisions throughout the process, it never included any concerning provisions, so we remain neutral through final passage. The governor signed the bill on May 3rd, along with the transmission bill, and also has an effective date of July 23rd. Finally is ESHB 1329, which prohibits utilities from shutting off service due to non-payment during extreme heat events. As you know, we heavily engaged on this legislation to ensure the final bill was operationally feasible, clear for our customers and for the utility, and focused on safety. We were successful in working with the bill's sponsors to address our operational and safety concerns related to the reconnection of disconnected customers, as well as clarify the language, the legislation's heat threshold. The legislative language shifted from temperature readings in every zip code to National Weather Service heat alerts. The bill was signed by the governor and is likely, and like all our other key legislation, has an effective date of July 23rd. As I mentioned earlier, three proposals we tracked on our key legislation report also failed to pass the legislature. While they failed to pass this year, they could be reconsidered in the next or future legislative sessions. Just to quickly recap on some of those, two SHB 1391, which would have authorized a third-party navigator program. We supported the bill after it was amended to include several of our requests. It's clear that with all the federal funding coming down for heat pumps and other energy efficiency incentives, there needs to be a wider sense of coordination. However, we wanted to ensure that that coordination at the state level would work in concert with existing energy programs, utility energy programs.
And excuse me, also with the feds, mm-hmm. because there are comparable programs, I think, coming under the IRA.
Correct,
so
exactly.
We want to make sure that we're covered, however it is.
Exactly, and I'll cover this also in the budget, but there's since this bill did fail, there's actually a budget proviso to study a little bit further how the state can again, make that coordination work as puzzle pieces. Next was SHB 1427, which would have changed solar net metering statutes, but failed to pass the House of Origin cutoff, indicating there wasn't a consensus on the path forward for this year. We will likely see additional discussions in the interim ahead of a 2024 session. Last was ESHB 50.
Before you go on, 1427. Yep. So what, there was a consensus, but what was the sticking point? What aspect? Was it the increase or was it?
I think there's a couple sticking points. The increase was one of them. There was a size component that most of the utilities had an issue with currently because of the BPA constraints for BPA customers. It's at 199 megawatts, I believe. They wanted to increase that to one gigawatt. So you're talking 2 football field size solar panel arrays. There was some aspects within the study itself. There's a lot of disagreement specifically on that point, but I think, again, we'll see a lot of discussions coming up, I think, where we might be able to find some agreement on.
So is there, you think there's awareness in the legislature about the equity challenges of net metering? I don't know, nationally, there's a bigger conversation about it. I think the Department of Energy just caught it recently.
Yeah, I think of the legislators who are paying attention to this issue, they do understand that there is this cost shift that occurs. This was one of the things, particularly after this legislation failed, there was conversations about including a study for a budget proviso, mm-hmm. specifically to study this cost shift. The state of California recently released a study similarly, indicating that there's a pretty big shift from non-solar customers to solar customers that tends to be also along socioeconomic status, that maybe there needs to be a more fair and equitable compensation model. And so, again, I think these are the types of conversations that we're going to be hearing a lot more through the interim and also ahead of next year.
Thank you.
No problem. Last one I want to touch upon is ESHB 1589, which was a proposal brought forward by PSE that would have created a path for them to shift away from natural gas service. While it moved further along in the process than any other of the other failed proposals, opposition continued to grow in the latter half of the session from a variety of stakeholders for a variety of different reasons. In particular, many stakeholders took issue with how fast the legislation would have taken effect. Like others, we do anticipate this will be another thing that might come back up in 2024. All right. Well, our issues weren't like, well, we certainly focused on our issues. There's a lot else going on in the legislature. Beyond what we just kind of discussed, those kind of buckets included other environmental stewardship efforts, including the first ever expanded producer responsibility, also known as EPR, program for battery recycling, changing statutes regarding light pollution for wind turbines, as well as a myriad of hydrogen incentives. As I mentioned, there's at the top of my presentation, homelessness and housing took center stage this session with the passage of reforms like middle housing, which limits the ability of certain cities and counties to ban certain types of zoning. There were also proposals in the human resource and labor space, as well as significant attention paid to public safety, such as a vehicle pursuit bill, assault weapons ban, and drug possession, which is what initiated the special session. And then there were the budgets. As you know, the state has three biennial budgets, capital, transportation, and operating. This year was also the first time we saw the inclusion of Climate Commitment Act funding. The capital budget, as you can see, it accounted for $717 million over 2 years. Also in the capital budget were other notable programs, increasing home electrification to the tune of $163 million towards appliance rebates, which includes utilities as a third-party manager, which is great news for us. There's $60 million appropriated to the Clean Energy Fund and $20 million towards the state's hydrogen hub application to the Department of Energy. In the operating budget, we also saw the reappropriation of unspent funding for utility assistance, which was incredibly helpful for the district's customers last year. That amount remaining is $15 million. There's $35 million towards low-income energy assistance grants and $138 million for community electric charging, as well as $74 million towards community battery and solar grants. The operating budget also includes funding for several notable studies. There is a $300,000 study for a low-income electric utility study, which was included to address the requests from environmental justice advocates who are seeking ways to further ease the financial burden on vulnerable households and design a statewide energy assistance program. There was $50,000 for a fusion study and $250,000 towards an energy navigator program stemming from the third-party navigator program that was on our key legislation report this session. Finally is the transportation budget, which saw the largest amount of CCA dollars. I thought it would be kind of fun to show you exactly how those funds stacked up. It ranges from alternative fuel and green energy fuel, ferry modernization, as well as other transit programs. Of note in the transportation budget was approximately $200 million for charging infrastructure and fleet replacement. So lots of money coming down from the CCA. Speaking of the CCA, I also wanted to touch upon the work we've been doing related to the implementation of the law. This is the first year the impacts of the CCA are really being realized. Some rulemakings finalized by Ecology colored the start of the session, such as the application of electric utilities no-cost allowances, which I know you've heard about. We've also been continuously engaging with our utility peers as well as the public generation pool members to better understand Ecology's thinking around some of these rulemakings. Through these efforts, we've gained additional clarification on their allowance allocation methodology, rulemaking timelines, and stakeholder engagement. It's been a little rocky. While we appreciate and understand the significant pressure the Department of Ecology has been under to implement these rules, we will need to continue this type of engagement to help answer current and future questions. Facing these challenges requires significant coordination among Snohomish PUD's energy generation experts and state GR to clearly communicate our needs for additional clarity to the chairs of the Environment and Energy Committees, who have been instrumental in making sure that we can get the answers out of Ecology that we would like. Beyond the rulemaking, I also mentioned there has been significant funding this year for the biennial budgets to the tune of $1.9 billion. The first quarterly auction also occurred earlier this year and was held and brought in approximately $300 million, which is a great first step. Last but not least is the special session that just started and quickly finished. It was a one-day session requested by Governor Inslee to address a fix in the state's drug possession laws. As you may know, in 2021, the state Supreme Court overturned Washington's criminal statute, which prohibited the possession of controlled substances in the Blake decision. In response, the legislature passed a temporary fix that would have expired at July 1st of this year. A compromise bill was brought forward in the final hours of the legislative session this spring, but failed to garner the necessary votes in the House. The governor then called a special session to start on May 16th to address this failure. And in the one-day session that happened, both the House and Senate passed a compromise bill that would toughen penalties for drug possession, but also significantly expand pathways for treatment, while also adding a little bit more leniency for first and second time offenses. The governor signed that bill the same day. One last note, that now that I've been through my first legislative session, I also want to share my appreciation for being in this role. It's a privilege to be serving the communities and customers as the face of this organization in Olympia. The district is a well-regarded voice amongst utilities, and it's a pleasure to be given the responsibility to do so. With that, I'll open it up and see if there are any other questions.
I just want to thank you for including the Department of Commerce's 2023 biennial energy report, 77 pages. I haven't read all of it yet, but I'm definitely going to read that and pass it on to other people.
Absolutely.
In my area.
It's an important one and something, I think we'll be reading through the interim. So I'm glad that you're reading it. Yes.
Yeah, thank you for it.
Absolutely.
I have a quick question. So when the legislature funds something like a $50,000 fusion study, is that to just to help them understand how the impact fusion may have on the state? Or
it's a great question.
Dropping the bucket.
It's not a ton of funding for it. I think that fusion seems as a technology to be relatively further in the future than some things. And I think one, it's the state to get a sense of where is this feasible here in the state? Like, who are the players?
Okay.
Where can we potentially use additional resources to try to figure out how we might be able to make this technology more integrated in research and development within the state itself?
Okay.
Yeah, but the 50,000, so it's more a kind of an exploratory shot than an actual.
Yeah, it's not a moonshot, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you. And thanks so much for keeping us abreast. And,
yeah,
absolutely.
And this has been a great year. And we're very well informed.
Absolutely. Happy to do
it. Appreciate the way you presented also. What did the work you do, but then how you presented is really helpful.
That was very, very helpful.
Right.
Kind of take us on the various stages. And just from my history and my perspective, the you and the team that represent us, not only in the state, but federally, top notch. And the work that you all do is critical, not to the utility, but every one of those almost million people that we serve. So job well done.
Well, thank you very much. And we're happy to be here. So thank you very much.
I think I mentioned it at the last meeting, but when I was in California recently, I saw people filling up their hydrogen powered cars. And places that are like the electric rechargers. Just drive in and get your hydrogen in about 3 or 4 minutes. So I hope we're looking at that, and I believe we are, right?
I know the state is certainly, there's a ton of money being poured into it. You can imagine that some of the gas stations, other infrastructure that's already there that could, that doesn't have to necessarily rebuild, like recreate the wheel, is very invested in wanting to know this. And I can say from the community, or from the committee processes that I've been a part of, there's always somebody there advocating.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Excellent job, Ryan. Okay. Short, but lots of good information presentation this morning. That's it for us.
All right. It is now 9:36 a.m., and the board will recess into executive session to discuss legal risks of current practice or proposed action under the terms set forth in the Open Public Meetings Act. It is anticipated that the executive session will last approximately 30 minutes and conclude at 10:06, approximately. The regular meeting will reconvene here in the commission room at 1:30 p.m.
Thanks.